And about 5 or 6 years ago, kind of behind my back, the team members started calling the garden gods into play. And it's like, hold on, what are garden gods? And they said, Greg, when you say things, they happen. Things just, I'll say, what if we do this? And the universe aligns and delivers this. And all of a sudden we're doing this. And it happened over and over and over again with my team in Phoenix, and they took notice. And just magic. So be careful with your words. And I think that it's just in me. It's just in me. It's, who I am on the planet to talk about food and good, healthy food and how to grow it. And it's just here.
Namaste, beautiful souls. I'm Shilpa, and you're tuned into the Omni Mindfulness Podcast, a sanctuary for spiritual entrepreneurs. As a holistic mindfulness coach and social marketing strategist, I'm here to guide you on a transformative journey. On this show, we explore captivating stories and provide practical tools that deepen your connection with your authentic self. Through the personal and professional narratives of remarkable individuals, we expand our consciousness and ignite the spark of possibility. Each season, I curate content that empowers you to create a holistic lifestyle encompassing spirituality, mindfulness, energy awareness, and mindset. Join me as we engage in conversations with experts in their respective fields and share solo casts from yours truly, all aimed at supporting you and relaxing, revitalizing, resetting your body, mind, and spirit. I'm your host and the visionary behind Omni Mindfulness. So what if just one story had the power to shift the trajectory of your life? What if you could become an instrument in helping others realize their true selves? And what if your soul's higher purpose lies in experiencing the joy of Omni Mindfulness? Remember, it's never too late to rewrite your story. What if there was a garden and fruit tree in every yard? That is a question my next guest, the gifted and innovative Greg Peterson, ponders every day. Founder of UrbanFarm.org and the host of the Urban Farm podcast with over 800 episodes, Greg has spent 32 years creating one of Phoenix, Arizona's first environmental showcase homes for urban farming. His 1/4-acre yard features an old-growth food forest with 80 fruit trees, rainwater harvesting, solar power, and reclaimed materials. On this Earth Day, he'll share his passion for growing your own food as a grassroots solution to the global climate crisis. And now, without further ado, here is Greg. Welcome, Greg. I am so honored to have you today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we have, I believe, something in common, which is my passion for the sustainability and environment and growing things.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could take a step back and share with the audience your story behind Urban Farm.
Urban farm and farming. So I've been interested from a very early age at growing fish for food. At the age of 9, I had fish aquariums. At the age of 15, I started my first business. I used to clean, service, and build fish ponds in Phoenix, Arizona, with a specialty of growing backyard or building backyard aquaculture ponds for people to grow food in. I was like 15, 16, 17 years old doing this, and people would pay me to do it. Go figure. And in 1981, I designed a what we would now call a regenerative farm on paper, because it didn't make sense to me that a fish farm would grow fish, harvest the 30% meat from the fish, and throw everything else away, wherever away is. This has been with me for the entirety of my life. And in 1991, I discovered something called permaculture. Are you familiar with permaculture? I like.
Yes, I've heard of it, but I'd love for you to re-educate me on it.
Perfect. I like to call it the art and science of working with nature. You know, we human beings, we think we know how to do it better than nature. And I have news for everybody listening. Nature's going to bat last. Nature will always win. So we have to figure out how to work in the flow of nature. So my definition of permaculture, again, is the art and science of working with nature. So how do we get in the flow and work with nature? And so I discovered permaculture in 91. I also discovered a couple of other things in 1991. I discovered a book called Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. It's a fiction book with a conversation between a gorilla and a man, and the gorilla is the teacher. And he's talking about how our food system came to be what it is today. And I really, really connected with that book. That's an extraordinary book. The third thing that happened for me in 1991 is I did a workshop at Landmark Education. It was their advanced course. And I created myself to be the person on the planet responsible for transforming our global food system. Now, that's not a burden for me. It's not a responsibility for me. It's a what gets me up in the morning. It's my vision for my life. It's what I work on. And what I'm very clear about is that this isn't a Greg project. This is a project that I share about in the world, and I need to enroll as many people into it as possible. And then the creme de la creme of 1991 was a friend of mine went on a sailing trip in the South Pacific, and they anchored at an island and went looking for a grocery store. And the people living on the island kind of looked at them funny and they said, go pick your own. And so he came back to me in 1991 with that. And it's like, wow. All right. So why aren't we growing food in every yard? I believe that the solution to our global food problem is growing food in people's yards, growing food in the city where we need it. So that's kind of how that all happened. I started calling my homes in Phoenix, Arizona, on a third of an acre. That's 80 feet wide and 160 feet deep. I started calling it the urban farm in 2001. And from 2002 until 2022, when I left Phoenix, we would do tours. And I had, oh, easily 10 or 15,000 people over that 20-year period come and see an edible landscape. And just like in nature, where food grows, when people come to my yard, they see food growing everywhere. And I designed it from a permaculture perspective so that it would self-perpetuate, so that things would go to seed and replant themselves year after year. I planted fruit trees. I'm a huge fan of fruit trees because you plant them once and you get food for decades. So I had 80 fruit trees at the urban farm on this third of an acre property. We had chickens in the backyard, and there was always something to eat every day from the yard at my house in Phoenix. And now I'm in Asheville, North Carolina. We moved here 2 years ago, and I'm working on doing the same thing here, making an old growth food forest in my yard. And it's turning out to be easier to do it here where it rains. So there you go. There's my story.
And what an awesome story. As I mentioned to you before we hit record, that the month of April has Earth Day. To me, I've taken it on as a personal passion that I want to learn more. I want to be that individual who can, and I hope I articulate this well, be in the flow, that at least I can do the basics, if not more, like you are doing. But when you word flow, that mindfulness teacher in me tuned in, because the notion that we could work with nature and yet be scientific about it is a path that definitely feels that's more in alignment with long-term sustainability.
Well, let's talk about that word. You brought the word up, sustainability. I don't like that word.
Okay, tell me why.
I know, right? In fact,
Using it, right?
about 20 years ago, I started giving a lecture, why we need to stop recycling.
Oh, okay.
And do I really believe that we need to stop recycling? No, but we need to get a lot more knowledge around it. And it's reduce, reuse, then recycle. And our entire culture is built around recycle, 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 not reduce and reuse. And so, along those same lines, all right, my brain just went sideways. Along, what were we talking about before?
So you were talking about the connotation around sustainability.
Sustainability. Okay, great. I'll pick it up from there. So let's talk about sustainability. Sustainability or sustainable simply sustains the mess we've created. It doesn't do anything to fix the problem. So I am much more a fan of the word regenerative. We as human beings design systems on this planet. You're sitting in a chair. That's a human system. We're sitting at a desk. We have these computers. We got roads. We got pipes. And every single human created system, and I challenge your listeners to come up with one that isn't, but every single human created system is degenerative. It breaks down over time. It goes away. And every single natural system, or most of them, is regenerative. They recreate themselves year after year after year. There's this process. And what we do in permaculture is we look at that regenerative process and we overlay it on our human condition to see how we can build, I'm not going to say regenerative systems, because I don't believe that humans can actually build 100% regenerative systems. But how we can build systems that are more regenerative. And for me, that's what permaculture is all about.
And I'm glad you brought up the issue you have around sustainability in terms of the terminology, because I do recall about a year ago when I was looking into this topic in general, I remember the concept, or and there was a diagram that's associated with it, that you want to not necessarily approach this concept from what will we get to finally, like, what do I recycle? Why not approach it from, like, maybe this is a simplistic example, but like at home, the straws we have are made out of something that will become part of Earth naturally. So it's made out of organic materials. And yes, it's not always fun sipping out of the straw because it does melt at times, but at least it's not going to hurt the environment through yet more plastic.
Yeah, well, and there's new studies coming out. Something like 90% of all the stuff we put into our recycle bins never gets recycled.
Okay, I'm so glad you went there, because my previous guest on this topic had also enlightened me about that. And she's an activist who had went in as far as talking about there's a systemic issue that we need to take up on a higher level in terms of how we can influence the system. When it comes to recycling, I had shared, and I'm going to share it with you, that I get so passionate, like cleaning everything out, making sure I put it in the recycle, yelling at my son, going, go put this in the recycling bin. And then when I hear stories about it doesn't even make it to a recycle place, But you
It's
know,
heartbreaking.
it's heartbreaking. But I mean, yes, I live in a progressive area in San Diego where maybe things are a little bit better than the rest of the planet, but nonetheless, it breaks my heart.
Yeah. A friend of mine did some research, wrote a book. I can't remember the name of the book about 15, 20 years ago. And he did research on where all the plastic was going. And he found that 15, 20 years ago, it was being, all the ships from China were bringing stuff here. They were putting it on the ships, shipping it back to China. And you know what they were doing with it? They were burning it for fuel. Exactly. It's just insane the stuff that we do with.
Yeah, you know, the term that comes to mind, and I'm sure you've seen this happen in real life, is out of sight, out of mind. And it is it's offensive to the human intelligence that we really do that.
Yeah, and this is what I sit with every day, and this is why I do what I do. To educate people on how to do it better.
How to do it better. Even before we hit record, I was telling you that right now we don't necessarily have the financial means to do the gardening that I'd like to do, but I mentioned the soil and you gave me some great tip about getting the soil prepared, so to speak.
You want to hear it again?
Yes, go ahead, for anyone
All
who
right. Yeah, for anybody that's listening. So, the most important thing that you can do when building a garden is put healthy soil in place. There's five components of healthy soil. Dirt is one of them, and the dirt is what you have in your yard. It's very dense, it's usually broken down rock, and there's generally not much that will grow in it, although it's mineral dense. It doesn't have the other four components to make it be able to grow healthy plants. So, dirt, airspace, water, organic matter, and everything that's alive in the soil. Those are the five components of healthy soil. And the really cool thing is that the way to fix broken dirt is to add lots and lots and lots of organic matter. And so, one of the things that I suggested for you to do, you have a backyard that you want to eventually grow something in, but you don't have the capacity to do that right now. This is a perfect solution. You basically set it up like a forest. And what I'm suggesting for you to do is get a load of woody mulch, wood chips. And there's a website out there called chipdrop.com. And you can coordinate with a tree service to dump a load of woody mulch in your front yard. And you usually get about 20 cubic yards, which is a lot, until you actually get it in place. So, what I suggested for you to do is to put 12 inches of woody mulch in the place where you want to eventually grow your garden. And what it'll immediately start doing at that interface between the dirt and the woody mulch, it starts breaking down and making super healthy, incredible soil. This was one of the first things that I did when we moved to our new farm in North Carolina, is I started putting down woody mulch where I want to put my gardens. And so this happened maybe 18 months ago when I started putting the woody mulch in place. And I was out there digging, and we're expanding the garden area. And I was out there digging in the woody mulch, and about 3 or 4 inches down, it wasn't woody mulch anymore. It was really nice, healthy soil. So essentially, what you're doing is you're setting the space up in your backyard with a foot of woody mulch. It's going to break down over time and make healthy soil so that, in 18 months or 2 years, you've got this healthy soil there to start planting stuff in.
And how long did it take you between the time you placed the mulch in your new backyard and where you started to see the transformation?
Oh, couple of months.
That's amazing.
Nature works amazingly, and Yeah. Well, and you don't want to go with 2 inches. You want to go with 10 or 12 or 16 inches, because then there's enough mass there so that it holds onto the water. I had a friend of mine, I told a guy that I knew in Phoenix 10, 12 years ago, told him to do this. And I was thinking 6 inches. He put 3 feet of woody mulch in his backyard. And I was there a year after he did it, and it hadn't rained in Phoenix from November to February. So for 4 months, it hadn't rained. And I asked him for a shovel, and I went out and dug a hole 18 inches down into this woody mulch, and it was wet. And I said, "Have you been watering this?" He said, "No, that's just from the rain we got in the fall." So it acts like a sponge, and it brings the microorganisms, and worms will show up just out of nowhere. It's amazing. And this is how it happens in nature. You know, in the forest, the leaves drop, the sticks drop, a deer comes along and leaves a deposit behind. And before long, you get this really amazingly healthy soil. I'm not passionate about this, by the
Well,
way.
I certainly feel the enthusiasm because, my goodness, simple things like that, we can make a ship. I mentioned to you that I wish our backyard was ready, but at least I could take some intelligent steps to make a change.
Yeah.
Now, I have a few other questions in regards to the simple changes that we can do. So
Okay.
we can, as someone like myself, novice but passionate about the environment, what micro steps can I take to make a difference in not only my backyard but on a maybe bigger scale? Because we were even talking about recycle and how can we make a difference there?
Reduce, reuse. We have in our car some stainless steel containers for takeout when you go to restaurants. Buy in bulk. There's more and more bulk food stores showing up that you can take your own containers to. Do whatever you can to reduce plastic use. At Trader Joe's, we bought these nice net bags for produce rather than taking a plastic bag every time you buy produce. Get grocery bags. I made a deal with myself almost 20 years ago that if I ever ended up at the grocery store without my bags, you can get them at Trader Joe's. You can buy them everywhere. They're usually cloth or some kind of, bag like that. Buy cloth bags. Those are better. I made a deal with myself that I was ever at the grocery store and I didn't have my own bags, the groceries would go back in the shopping cart and I would haul them out to the car that way. And I've had to do that a couple of times, but that's my level of commitment with it. And, get a stainless steel water bottle. Don't use plastic water bottles. Don't buy sugary drinks. First of all, for your health, don't buy sugary drinks. And secondly, don't buy sugary drinks because they're in plastic bottles. Now, I don't know why my computer does that, but it makes people laugh. For those of you that aren't seeing this video, when I do a peace sign, I get balloons that show up. You're muted all of a sudden.
Oh, okay. I was just saying that if I put up my hand, sometimes Zoom does silly things as well. For those
Oh.
who are not watching this on my YouTube but listening in, I do encourage you to go to the YouTube because what Greg has in the background is incredible. It's so serene. Maybe you can describe what that scene is.
It's my front yard, and this is looking west. And in the foreground, there's some pampas grass on the left and some gladiolas on the right that are in bloom. I lived in Phoenix for 55 years, and people ask me, why did you go from Phoenix to or suburban Asheville? And for about the past 20 years, I've been wanting to find someplace quiet to be. And so we're about 15 minutes outside of downtown Asheville in a suburban slash rural area. And it's rolling hills, and we get 40 inches of rain here, and things grow like mad. And one of my big goals is to see how much food I can actually grow, of my own food that I can actually grow. And it's a process to learn it, because if you think about how many, for us, how many heads of broccoli we eat, we probably eat 2 heads of broccoli a week. It's one of our favorite things. Go try and grow some of it to see what it takes to grow it, and you will have a much deeper appreciation for the people that are growing it and getting it to you, because it's not a simple task to grow, a head of broccoli. Say we use one a week. That's 52 heads of broccoli a year that we go through. That's a lot.
And putting it in that context with that perspective is really makes you feel, from a mindfulness perspective, gratitude, but also from the perspective of someone who is earnestly hoping to learn more. I realize it's a daunting thing because I mentioned to you that my father-in-law had given me a little area, I forget what it was called, raised
Oh,
garden
yes.
bed. And I was so excited, put up a lot of effort, very naive. So just kind of go Googling what I could do and went about it. And when things started to bloom around springtime, I was so excited. I'm like, oh, I see like squash, I see kale, a little stuff. And then the critters ate it. Barely got to it. But it just puts in perspective that these things are not easy.
Right. Exactly. It takes an effort and a commitment.
Yeah. Now, when you were describing flow, maybe you can go a little bit back into that. For those who may not have any experience with gardening and maybe not even really that in tune with nature, what does it mean for you as you teach or pass on that wisdom to future generations that to be in flow with nature and to then use the knowledge that you put together? And I imagine it's a lot of things that you can teach future generations.
Oh, we have so much content on our website. I've been putting content up for 20 years now. I've been shooting videos for 20 years. I have all kinds of information because I'm deeply committed to transforming our global food system. So how do you do that? You do it through educating people. And there are some really simple things that you can do, even if you don't have a yard. First of all, the most ex here's a here's a quiz for you. What is the most expensive thing to buy in the grocery store, plant-wise, and the easiest thing to grow?
I'm going to take a guess. Is it spinach? I don't know. Or tomatoes? Hey there, sweet souls. If you're finding value in this episode, I'd be so honored if you could take a moment to share it with that one person you know it would truly serve. And here's some exciting news. My podcast, Omni Mindfulness, was recently ranked in the top 10% globally by ListenScore. It's all thanks to your amazing support and listenership. So let's spread the love and wisdom together. Thank you for being a part of my mindfulness community. Sending you lots of love and light. This is Shilpa.
Herbs. Herbs are the most expensive. You pay $5 for, a little packet of 2 ounces of basil. Basil grows like a weed, and you can grow basil in a sunny windowsill in a small pot. You can grow rosemary in a warm, like your climate. You plant a rosemary bush and it'll grow for decades and get 4 feet tall and, be productive all year round. So, plant herbs is what I tell people for starters. because you're going to love them when you're preparing your food. The second thing you can do that's really super simple is make sprouts. And you just get some sprouting seeds. There's broccoli and there's all kinds of seeds, beet seeds that you can sprout. So you buy sprouting seeds. And I had a guy on my podcast, the Urban Farm Podcast, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, that wrote a book on sprout salads. And he tells you how to, make 5 or 6 different kinds of sprouts. And it's really simple. You get a mason jar, and there's a screen that you put on the top of the mason jar. You put the seeds in the jar, like 2 tablespoons of seeds in the jar, and you rinse them once a day and leave them on the counter. And in 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 days, you have these green sprouts that are really nutritious, they're tasty, and you just make a bunch of them up and make a salad out of it. It really can be that simple.
It's interesting you mentioned the sprouts. My mom had passed on to me a little container where you can sprout things, and I sometimes I have it and I see it and I get all intimidated, thinking, oh, I wonder how to do it. But I have sprouts in the house. I have lots of herbs, and you're correct that they are pricey. But if you like to cook like I do, it's great. And also, sprouts are very nutritious.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So those are two easy places to start with gardening. There's so many ways that you can start gardening. Your raised bed, the most important thing to put in that raised bed is good soil. I've been doing raised beds here because going in the ground takes longer. So I've been building raised beds here, and I will spend $40 on the wood to make a raised bed, and I'll spend $250 to put the soil in it so that I got good soil. And good soil is usually locally made. You want to get somebody that tests it for any toxins or anything like that. I buy it by the cubic yard tote. So I buy it a cubic yard at a time, and it's not cheap, but it's going to make really good food, because when you're growing in that soil, the plants are using the nutrients from that soil to make the plant healthy. So if you have bad soil, if you have subpar soil, I could use another word, but you're going to get subpar plants. So spend your money on healthy soil until you can make your own.
Until you can make your own, yeah. And how would one make their own? Is that an elaborate process itself?
Not really. It's what I did at the Urban Farm in Phoenix. I was in that property for 32 years, and I originally tilled the soil, and I only tilled it once. I'm a no-till person because I believe when you till the soil, it breaks up all the microorganisms in it. So what I did is I tilled it once to get it ready, and then every year you just add an inch or two of compost on top. Just add new compost, add mulch on top. And over time, my front yard at the Urban Farm in Phoenix had 2 feet of topsoil that was beautiful for growing food in. I had to dig down 2 feet to get to dirt. And yeah, I was there for 32 years, but it's a process. Nature doesn't happen overnight, so we just need to make sure that we're giving it the things that she needs and let nature happen.
You mentioned compost. I don't necessarily know if I'm ready to do composting because of lack of backyard, but maybe educate me on the topic of composting.
Yes. So when people say composting, it's this thermophilic or heat process. And thermophilic composting is not easy. It is complicated. It takes effort. It takes a lot of materials. If you're going to hot compost, which is what people traditionally think of, if you're going to hot compost, you need a space with material that is 4 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot. That is 64 cubic feet of material. And of that material, I'm going to give you a simple answer here in a minute, but of that material, you need 60 to 70% browns, which are leaves and mulch and stuff that's carbon-based, and 30% greens. And in order to effectively compost in Phoenix, it took me connecting with a restaurant to get 5 to 10 buckets of food waste from them a week in order to thermophilic compost. So, as you can imagine, I try and steer people away from thermophilic composting. Well, what else can you do? Well, the simplest thing you can do is called pit composting. Go out and dig a hole in your yard, pour the stuff in the hole, and cover it up. It's that simple. And especially in your case, if you do this in your gardening area, over the course of the next couple of years, just every time you have a bucket, just go out and dig a hole and pour it in. And what happens over time is nature happens, and it eventually makes this great healthy soil. Or, and this is my favorite, worm composting. Worm composting is so incredibly simple. Basically, once you get your worm composter set up, you just feed your food scraps to your worms. And in 6 to 9 months, you have this amazing, they call it worm castings, it's worm poop. They also call it gardener's gold. It is microbial, it's full of microbes and full of nutrients. And in San Diego, it would be super simple for you to do something like that. So, worm composting.
And I've seen at more like earth type stores that there are a lot of them out here along the beach, little containers that are called compost containers.
Yep.
Are those?
I know what that system is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I've had this person on my podcast from that organization in San Diego. They are doing community composting. So there is a community composting program in San Diego where you drop off your food scraps and they take it and they turn it into compost. And then I think you can get compost from them.
I'm going to probably try to make sure I get that information from you. It's of all places in San Diego. Nice to
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I've been to stores where you see these physical devices where you could throw things in to compost. So
It's
I
not composting.
Oh, it's not. Oh.
No, I haven't found a physical, because what they say is put your food scraps in this machine and in 3 days you'll have compost. Compost doesn't happen in 3 days. Compost happens in 6 to 9 months.
Oh, yeah.
So I checked out some of those machines recently, and they're not necessarily bad. They're just not composters. And they're basically the ones that I looked at were dehydrating the food and turning it into a powdery thing, which might be really good for a worm bin. Do that first, and then, anyways, yeah.
Well, that is very informative for me because I've seen those things and I've wondered if I should get it. I love the idea though, I could just dig a hole because I've been doing that. I had a neighbor who has this incredible garden and she was very knowledgeable and she would tell me that, but I didn't know the science behind. Like, she has a great garden, she knows what she's talking about. So I will continue practicing that or do it more often. And I
Awesome.
do you, have you heard of the concept? Because I have a couple of them. AeroGardens that sit on
Oh,
your couch.
yes.
What are your thoughts around AeroGarden? What's the best type of things to grow in them? I have a couple, but I seem not to have the green thumb.
Yeah. They take attention, just like anytime you have a plant, it takes attention. You need to make sure it gets watered and handled and nutrients. And I have been growing food since 1975. And in 2010 or 2011, right around that time, a friend of mine sent me an email with a tower garden. Now, a tower garden is a jumbo version of your aero garden. It's basically a hydroponic growing tower. And on that day in, let's call it 2010, I had a conversation with her. I met with her and a couple of her friends. And from 6 a.m. till noon, that's all it took me to buy one. And until we left Phoenix, I used it every single season. And what we used to do is we used to grow greens in it in the summertime. So I brought the tower garden inside and we grew greens in it for salads because Heidi and I love salads. And so they're not cheap to get into. I don't know what they are these days. I think mine was $600 back in 2010, but it's been paid off. And we still grow greens in it for salads every year. And it costs me about $50 a year for their nutrients. So I think it's AeroGardens, it's just another way to grow food. And there are so many ways to grow food.
Well, I do appreciate that. And in the very beginning, you also mentioned, oh, before I go to the next question, though, did you bring your tower garden to your new residence?
We absolutely brought the tower garden. I never would have believed how much energy it would take to get the infrastructure in place on a property for growing food. So the house that I lived at in Phoenix, I was there for 32 years, and food just grew. And that happened over the course of the first 10 years that I was there. Moving here, there was no infrastructure for growing food. We had no garden beds, no chicken coop, no fruit trees in the ground. So it has taken a massive amount of energy to get our food growing infrastructure in place. And we're getting close. I'd say within 6 months to a year, we'll have all of our structures in. And that's when I'm going to bring the tower garden back out, is to start using it again. But we did bring it here. We love it. And
I could talk to you for hours of so many facets, and I look forward to following up with you just to maybe even take your course, watch your videos, everything about your company. I will make sure is in your show notes. But one last question, going back to the very beginning, I'm so fascinated that on your own you learned how at a young age to do the craft of. I want to call it farming, but it's more local farming at home. Did you have an influence? Did somebody teach you? Like, I'm curious.
My grandfather and grandmother had a small farm in Vancouver, Canada. We lived in Phoenix, Arizona. We only got up there a couple of times. Mom and dad didn't garden. When we moved into our house with land around it in 1974, Mom said, "See the right half of our backyard? That's your garden. Go start digging." I just bought seeds, and again, I think, if you believe in reincarnation, I think something happened that got brought through, because this passion is mostly really good for me. Sometimes it's a curse because it's always there and I always have to be doing it. But it's things like this happen. I planted my first peach tree in 1975. By 1978, I had so many peaches, I didn't know what to do with them all. And I said to my friend Tim, "Hey, Tim, I have no idea what to do with these peaches." And he said, "My mom can teach you how to can." So I learned how to can when I was 18 years old from my friend Tim's mom. So I live a life, I live a very interesting life. Things just seem to align. when I and I've come to learn how powerful my words are. You have to be very careful about what you say in the world. And this really came to light about 5 or 6 years ago. I run a fruit tree education program in Phoenix. I've been doing it now for 25 years, and I have a whole team of people that I work with. And about 5 or 6 years ago, kind of behind my back, the team members started calling the garden gods into play. And it's like, hold on, what are garden gods? And they said, Greg, when you say things, they happen. Things just, I'll say, what if we do this? And the universe aligns and delivers this. And all of a sudden, we're doing this. And it happened over and over and over again with my team in Phoenix, and they took notice. And just magic. So be careful with your words. And I think that it's just in me. It's just in me. It's, who I am on the planet to talk about food and good, healthy food and how to grow it. And it's just here.
I think it's profound. To me, it was immediately clear as soon as you said that story in the beginning that there's a deep spiritual connection there with you and Earth. And it's a gift. Honestly, it's such a gift because I talk about a lot about people's desire to find their purpose. And while I feel like I've intuitively been aligned there, I'm also aware how frustrating it can be when you don't feel that sense of purpose in life. But for you, it feels like it was so seamless that, yeah, I
It
mean, I
was,
believe in reincarnation, so absolutely, there's some connection there.
Well, and here's what I tell people that are struggling with that, finding there's pick something. Because when you pick something, there's power in that. When you're sitting there, well, should I do this or well, should I do that? Or, maybe I'll pick this. No, pick it. Fully put 100% pick it. I can't tell you how many times in my life that I've done, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be great? I did this. Wouldn't it be great to gold plate Slinkies? The Slinkies? Perfect boomer toy, right? Total flop. But I picked it and I did it full out until it didn't work. I've had over 30 businesses in my life. I've been self-employed since I was 15. And magic happens or it doesn't. I had a business that I started in 2003, and it was a urban farm nursery, and we were raising organic 4-inch plant starts for people. And the first year we decided that we were going to do 80,000 plant starts. Not 8,000 plant starts, not 800 plant starts, but 80,000 plant starts, right? And we go through this process. We're raising them up. They look great in January. They're too small to sell. In February, it rained every weekend. And people don't, when it rains in Phoenix, people don't go out. So they weren't buying plants. So I ended up giving away 50,000 plant starts in March. And, if I would have let that stop me, then I wouldn't have gone on to the next one. So I've had failures like that. That was a massive failure for me, but it lived in the realm of fully choosing. This is what I'm going to be doing right now. So my piece of advice for people is pick it fully 100% until it doesn't work or you change your mind, but be in the pick.
And just what you were saying kind of ties back to that point you just made about being conscious. So it sounds like you are consciously allowing yourself to pick something, but you're also being very conscious with your words and your choices because that's energy. And having that awareness is mindfulness. It's a spiritual mindfulness. So I'm glad that you are aware of that because a lot of people aren't. Not, not well after their 50s. I know that some people just are drifting,
Yeah.
unaware that they're energetic beings.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what a awesome interview. I just loved it. I hope I can have you back. What
I'm
a
game.
huh? Yeah. You and I can't wait to share the efforts I make in continually growing in my skill set in urban farming, and hopefully taking your courses and learning from you. Did you ever go back to that original passion that you had mentioned, growing fishes or farming fish?
It lived with me for about 20 years. When I first moved into the property in Phoenix that became the urban farm, I built a small-scale aquaculture system and was raising fish. And I've pretty much gotten away from eating animals. I'm not completely a vegetarian, but I'm mostly 98% a vegetarian. So I'm just not a fan of eating animals anymore for mostly political reasons because I don't like the way they get treated. But
Yeah.
I still know how to do it. I could still set up a aquaculture pond today and run it, and it would grow fish.
Yeah, the only reason I asked was I'm mostly vegetarian as well, but what fascinated me is that my goal or dream is to have a little koi farm in the backyard one day, not to eat, but to enjoy.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I wonder if there's some skill sets that one can acquire to understand how to have a pond with fish in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely is. So you've mentioned a couple times our classes.
Yes.
You've mentioned a couple times our classes. We have many online classes. We have several online courses. What I would like to do is invite anybody listening to go to healthysoilhacked.com. And I've put together a series of videos and some content on how to grow healthy soil, which is the most important thing we can be doing.
And I will make sure that the show notes have that detail. Anything you share with me about your business and any courses will all be in the show notes. And also, when I put this on YouTube, you will be able to then connect and I will show you how.
Awesome, thank you.
Content. But thank you. And thank you for being a representative, a representation for Earth Month. Earth Day should be Earth Day every day.
Right. That's what John Denver said in the song no, not Calypso. Every Day is Earth Day. He wrote a song. John Denver wrote a song called Every Day is Earth Day. Go listen to it. It's amazing.
Well, maybe that'll be like a little background music for our podcast.
There you go.
Well, thank you, Greg. I know you're 3 hours ahead and you were so patient in waiting to make this happen. I can't wait to like talk to you very soon and take your classes.
Right back at you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in, sweet soul. If you've enjoyed this episode, I would be so grateful for your kind review on Apple Podcast. Simply click on the link in the show notes to leave your lovely feedback and uplift our spirits. Your support means the world to me and helps our show thrive. So please show me your love and continue to practice Omni Mindfulness.